Alright, Shavuot, say good morning. Let's see. This is, by the way, this is the new Shita. You're never going to know when I'm starting the daf. It might be some days 558, some days it might be 553, other days 552. So it's safe. If you come at 540, it's safe. I'm just kidding. Alright, that didn't go over well. I'm sorry.
You get a seat too.
That is true as well. Alright, Shavuot, say, let's begin. So let's say today's daf is daf Zayin. We are starting from the Mishnah. Beautiful, beautiful daf today. Says the Gemara. Actually, says the Mishnah. Ketzad Osela. So we'll say, so what is the process ultimately again of the Sotah? Remember, now we've spent the first six blot really focusing on how a woman becomes a Sotah. We focused on Kinui, we focused on Stira, we focused on Tumah. Now the Gemara is going to actually go through the process in the Beis HaMikdash of Tumah. Actually, excuse me, before we get to that, first we're going to talk about what happens at home. So Ketzad Osela. So what happens ultimately again? Now remember, at this point in time, he's given her the warning in front of two witnesses. She's violated the warning in front of two witnesses. So what happens now? Ketzad Osela. Molicha la Beisdin Sheva Osel Makom. He takes her to the Beisdin in their town. And the Beis Din, again, the Beis Din gives the husband two Torah scholars to accompany him on the way to the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Shema yavo aleha baderech. Lest the husband be tempted to engage in relations with his wife. Therefore, again, the two Talmidei Chachamim will be there to prevent that ultimately from occurring. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Ba'ala ne'eman aleha. Rabbi Yehuda says, no. Her husband is believing. Rabbi Huda holds that he does not need additional Talmidei Chachamim to come in and to kind of serve as a chaperone. Rather, again, he is believed ultimately that he will not have relations with her. Says the Gemara, Trevi Ihu Hatlasa. Now, what's interesting is the following. So after they leave the Beis Din, so what's happening? So remember, there are two Talmidei Chachamim plus the husband himself, plus the husband himself. So what happens? That's a total of three. So let's say that this supports the position of Rav. The Amrav Yehuda Amar Rav, because Rav Yehuda is still in the name of Rav. Lo Shanu Ela Beir. So we'll say, listen to this. So this is actually a discussion, interestingly enough, by Yichud. So there's a fundamental machlokas when it comes to Yichud as to what's the man-woman ratio in order to avoid Yichud problems. So Rav was of the opinion that Lamaisa, two men and one woman is not Yichud. But when is that true? That's only when they're secluded in the city. But let's say if they're going to a desolate place, you require three men and one woman. What's the logic behind that? Because if they're traveling, let's say in a desolate place, in an uninhabited place, one of the men may have to take care of his needs and therefore, again, may distance himself from the group. If you're only traveling with two men and one woman, then what? Then lemaisa, again, you're going to run into a yichud problem. Therefore, in order to ensure that the yichud problem does not occur, you have to have three men and one woman. This concern, of course, doesn't really apply in the city because by the city, there are always people around. So therefore, even if one of the men leaves in order to take care of his physical needs, lemaisa, there's still someone else around. So says the Gemara, So Gemara says, lo, ha'cha hainu taima. That's not true. So remember, the Gemara wants to actually bring this Mishnah as a raya, as a proof for, again, Rav's Shita of Yichud. That Yichud in the city is avoided by two men and one woman. Yichud in desolate places, uninhabited places, is taken care of with three men and one woman. To which the Gemara, and that's why, again, because this man has to travel from his city to Yerushalayim, so again, the business is giving him two Talmidei Chachamim to accompany him. Therefore, you have two Talmidei Chachamim, the husband, three men, one woman. Even if they have to travel through uninhabited places, no problem of Yichud. To which the Gemara says, no. Lo, that's not the reason. This is not a Yichud issue here. Hachu hainu taima ki echi de lehavo ilayhu sahadi tamidi chacham. Excuse me, sahadi. The difference over here is we want these two tamidi chacham to go along. Why? In order that they could testify about the husband. Testify about what? If you look at Rashi, de lehavi alei sahadi im yavo aleha. If he has relations with her, ya'idu alav lebeis din hagadol v'lo yishakua. Bosai, in the event that he does have relations with her, they will testify to this fact, and that will preclude him from administering to her the rest of the Sota process. To which the Gemara says, Tamidi Chachamim in, Koli Alma lo. Now it's interesting because the Mishnah says that what? The Mishnah says that the Beis Din Dafka gives him two Talmidei Chachamim to accompany him. Which sounds like it's only Talmidei Chachamim that could come with. But regular people not. Lema Miseile Leidach Derav. Say that this supports the other position of Rav. Da'am Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Because Rav Yehuda is the name of Rav. Lo Shanu Ela K'sherin. This only applies with kosher people. Now, I will say, now what does this mean? This only applies. So take a look. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Lo shanu diisha misyachades im shnei anashim. Rabbi said, when do we say these shiurim, so to speak, of yichud, that two men with one woman in the city, or that three men with one woman in an uninhabited place, does not constitute yichud? These are only with individuals who are ksherin, individuals who are known to possess, we'll call, you know, normative morality, right? No moral standards. It was saying that, first of all, you should just know the automatic assumption is that every person is like that. Meaning, we assume every person is like that until we know otherwise. So when do we say that these numbers for avoidance of yichud issues work? When you're dealing with anashim ksherim, however, about prutzin, it was saying if you're dealing with immoral people, then afilu asara namilo, then even 10 men who are prutzin with one woman will still go ahead and create a yichud problem. The Gemara tells a story. My Sahaya, there was once a story, actually quite amazing. Votzia asara b'mita. And what happens? 10 men took a woman out. They pretended like she was dead. So they were going ahead and taking her out, so to speak, for burial outside of the city. And they were all going to engage in an act of immorality. So the point the Gemara is making over here is, you see that Lamaisa, again, this was a large group of men. So remember, this is not a numbers issue. I mean, it is partially a numbers issue, but it's also Lamaisa, again, a numbers issue coupled together with a personality or a morality issue. So the Gemara says, therefore, the Gemara, remember, we'll say, the Gemara is trying to figure out over here that it's Dafka Talmidei Chachamim. So why is it Talmidei Chachamim? Because, again, it's only Talmidei Chachamim who are considered to be Ksherin. Good morning. And therefore, again, good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. It's been remarked on the podcast that you get a special welcome every morning, so I don't want it to... So the Gemara says the following. So therefore, again, it's dafka that we want Talmidei Chachamim, in order to avoid any type of morality issues. To which the Gemara says, lo, no, that's not the reason here. Hachu hayna taima diyadi la'asriye bay. The difference over here is what? The difference over here is the reason we want Talmidei Chachamim ultimately to go ahead and come with the husband is that they know how to deliver proper hasra. So bottom line, when it comes down to, is the following: is that lemaisa again, when he goes to the Beis Din is sending two Talmidei Chachamim. Why Talmidei Chachamim? So first of all, again, the Iker idea is that we don't want the husband to have relations with his wife, because ultimately that goes ahead and derails the sota process. Why are we sending two Talmidei Chachamim? Why Talmidei Chachamim? Because again, lemaisa, they know how to give proper hasra that he should not go out and be with his wife. That's number one. Why ultimately two of them? In order that they could be witnesses if in fact he does anything. So the Gemara goes right to Rabbi Yehuda Omer Bailo. Remember, Rabbi Yehuda holds you don't need to send two witnesses. Rather, halacha lemaisa, again, the husband is believed. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Bailo Ne'eman Mikal V'Chomer. Listen, this is quite interesting. So Rabbi Yehuda wants to suggest that Lamaisa, the husband is believed, meaning the husband could travel. Thank you, Vasya, get more chairs. So the husband needs to go, the husband could go himself. Ultimately, again, the husband could go himself with the wife and need not take additional Talmidei Chachamim with them. Rabbi Yehuda says this is based on a Kal V'Chomer. What's the Kal V'Chomer? Umani da shehi bekares baila ne'emon aleho. So we'll say if a woman is in nida, remember again, when a woman is in nida, ultimately relations with her is punishable by karis. So if a woman is with nida and her husband is believed about her, right? Her husband is, meaning, again, I both say, you know, when a woman is in nida, a husband doesn't need edus in the house that he's not going to go out and be with his wife. So lemaisa, if he's believed about his wife who's in nida, then it's punishable by karis. Sota shehi balav lo kol shekin. Then all the more so sota, right? If a man is with his wife who's a sota, technically, even though it's usser, it's only, quote unquote, a lava prohibition. So both say, if he's believed regarding karis, meaning if a husband is believed to live with his wife without external eidos, and he's not going to have relations with her, and again, it's a situation of karis, he's certainly believed when? In a situation of alav. To which the Gemara says, "V'rabbanon, I'm sorry, b'lav kol kol shekin, v'rabbanon he ano senes." The Rabbanon disagreed that. The Rabbanon say, "No, your argument is exactly why you're wrong. Nida dekares chamirale." Well, see, there is the difference. You see, yes, we could trust the man. We could trust the man not to have relations with his wife when it's punishable by kares umehemin, and therefore chamirale umehemin. We know he's not going to violate something that has kares. V'sota delav lo chamirale v'lo umehemin. But it's quite possible that sota, which is quote unquote only a lav, perhaps again he won't treat as stringently, and therefore he will violate her. Not violate her. He will have relations with her, and therefore we need the edus there. We need the talmid chacham to make sure that doesn't happen. Rabbi Huda says mikal v'chor ma'isila. Rabbi Huda goes. So the Gemara says Rabbi Huda mikal v'chor ma'isila. Does Rabbi Huda really learn this out from the kal v'chor? So I remember it appears that Rabbi Huda's shita in the Mishnah is that the husband need not travel with two additional edim al tzakal v'chomer. What's the kal v'chomer? If a husband is believed not to have relations with his wife, he's a nida, which is punishable by kares. He's certainly believed not to have relations with his wife, who's a sota, which is only punishable by a lav. So the Gemara says, really, is that where Rabbi Huda learns this out from? I thought, v'har Rabbi Huda mikra ma'isila. I thought Rabbi Huda actually learns this out from a pasuk. What's the pasuk? Desanya vehevi ha'ish es ishto el ha'kohen. So listen to this. The pasuk says the man will bring his wife to a kohen. What do you see from this? Min ha'Torah ha'ish mevi es ishto. Oh, I will say, what do you see from here? You see from here that midda arais. Remember, how does the Torah phrase it? The man shall bring his wife, which indicates to us what? That lamaisa, it's the husband who could bring his wife directly to the kohen without being accompanied by anyone. However, aval amru chachamim, most renowned shnei tamidi chachamim, shema yavo aleha bederech. But what happens? The rabbi said, let's give him two tamidi chachamim to accompany him, lest he go ahead and have relations with her on the way. So we'll say, what the b'raisa seems to be indicating over here is that shita Rabbi Huda. Now remember, this shita over here in this b'raisa is not ascribed to Rabbi Huda, it's ascribed to the Tanakama, but it's the same shita. It's the idea is that the husband does not need additional witnesses, tamidi chachamim, to accompany him. He could bring his wife himself. But whereas Rabbi Huda was learning it out from a kava chomer earlier, here he's learning it out from where? Here it's learning it out from Mamish Amafur Shabbat. To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi says, Baila ne'eman mikal v'chomer. Now, interesting enough, in this braisa, it's Rabbi Yossi who advances the kal v'chomer. What's the kal v'chomer? Umani doshi v'kares, Baila ne'eman aleha. So I'll say, when it comes to nida, which is punishable by kares, again, a husband is believed. Now, what does it mean a husband is believed? We allow a husband to be alone with his wife, and we're not concerned that what? That he's going to have relations with her. Sota shehi balav lo kol shekin, or the most of sota, which the ma'isa again is just a lav, he should be believed. To which, I'm sorry, so many them, so the sheba lav lo kol shekin, amrulei set Rabbi Yossi, im amark benita, so mostly listen to this. In this version of the discussion, they give another counter-argument. Remember, the first time around, the Gemara said this is not a good kal v'chomer. Why? Because a person will be more meticulous with an iser kares than they will be with an iser lav. Here they give another argument to the kal v'chomer. This is amazing. Im amrit benita shekin yesh la heter, tomar besota she'en la heter. We'll say, here the Gemara says, there's a fundamental difference, which is what? Now, when it comes to Nida, what's going to happen? A man could control himself. Why? Because he knows that his wife is going to become permitted to him just a few days later. It's what the Gemara Maseches Nida terms as pas besalo. A man has bread in his basket, which means that if a person knows that they're going to be able to satisfy their desires, not right now, but sometime later on, that gives a person the ability to restrain their desires a little bit. So that's why we trust him when it comes to Nida. On the other hand, when it comes to Sota, we'll say, remember again, with Sota, now remember, with Sota, it could be that she's innocent. It could be that she's innocent. Now, chances are, if she's innocent, he's going to be in the doghouse for a while anyway. Right? But the idea is, Sota, it's also quite possible that she's not going to be innocent, which means that it's possible that he will never be able to be with her again. As such, what the Gemara says, Va'omer, Mayim Genuvim Yimtiku. It says very profound pasuk. So the pasuk again says, pasuk initially says, stolen waters are always sweeter. The idea over here is that when the man is with his wife, he's going to offer the Beis HaMikdash, and what happens? He knows that it's quite possible that he'll never be with her again. That desire that he has for her will be even more amplified, will be even more acute. And therefore, Lemaisa, there's a real concern that he may come to have relations with her. Rabbi Huda Omer Minat Torah, Aish, maybe as ishto ala kohen. Shnei emar, behavi aish as ishto. So listen to this. This Rabbi Huda says that a man is able to bring his wife to the Beis HaMikdash all by himself, based on the Pasuk, because the Pasuk says a man will bring his wife to the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara, so I'll say, see, now we have a problem. What's the problem? Rabbi Huda, now, there's good news and bad news. The good news is, Rabbi Huda is consistent with his Shita. What's the consistency? That Lemaisa again, a husband has the ability to bring his wife to the Beis HaMikdash for the soul to process himself, and does not require the two Talmidei Chachamim. What's the problem? The problem is now we have two different versions as to how he's arriving at that conclusion. According to the first approach, Rabbi Huda is basing that on a kavachomer from Nida. If by Nida, which is an Isser Kares, a husband is believed by himself without external Eidos, certainly by Sota, which is a Laf, he's believed. Second Bryce has it, no, where is he learning this out? From a Pasuk, Mamashim, a first Pasuk. So the Gemara says, so which one is it? Is it a kavachomer or is it a Pasuk? Everyone's like, you understand, what's the, now you'll say to yourself, who cares, bottom line is the same. Well, it matters, because remember, first of all, the kavachomer could be refuted with a Pircha. If it's a Xeris, a Kasa, if it's a Pasuk, so then it's a Pasuk. To which the Gemara says, Kavachom Beresh. So the Gemara says, what's going on over here? To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you. Kavachom Beresha Uperchua. Originally, Rabbi Huda advanced this argument through the mechanism, through the medium of a Kavachomer. But then what happened? They refuted the Kavachomer. Right? They both say, how do they refute the Kavachomer? So the Kavachomer was refuted two ways. Number one, it was refuted by the fact that, first of all, because Sota is so Chomer, that's dafka why a man could be trusted. But by a less Chomer prohibition, by a less strict prohibition, perhaps he can't be trusted. Right? By Nida, there's an Isser Kares, and therefore that's why he's believed, because it's a severe prohibition. But by Sota, which is only quote-unquote alav, he shouldn't be believed. That's refutation number one. Refutation number two was that by Nida, he's believed. Why? Because again, she'll become permitted to him later on. By Sota, she may never become permitted to him. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Huda originally advanced this argument through a Kavachomer, but then once the Kavachomer was refuted, Vahadra Amaluhu Kra, then he said, fine, it's a pasuk. Now you'll say to yourself, one second, Rabbi Huda, if you've got a pasuk in your back pocket, so why are you even starting with the Kal Vachomer? What's the answer? Well, so you see this all the time. The Gemara says, Svara always trumps psukim. That if we could arrive at something through Svara, through logical debate, through logical idea, then Lemaisa, again, that always trumps Svara. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara both say, the sugya ends, Rabbi Huda hainu tanakama. Isn't Rabbi Huda saying the same thing as Tanakh? But also remember, the second Brice that the Gemara quoted seemed to say the same thing as Rabbi Huda. They're both learning out this concept that a man could go ahead and take his wife to the Beis HaMikdash without Tamidi Chachamah from the Pasuk, bless you, to which the Gemara says, Ika Beinayu Aval Amru. We'll say, so the fundamental machlok between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Huda is, remember what the Brice said? The Brice said that Lemaisa, again, that Lemaisa, that although a husband could take his wife to the Beis HaMikdash himself, Aval Amru, the rabbi said that we're going to send two Talmidei Chachamim with you. The Tanakhama subscribes to the Aval Amru. Rabbi Huda holds that never happened. Rabbi Huda says there was no Aval Amru. The halacha was and always is that a husband could escort his wife himself to the Beis HaMikdash, and he is believed to say that he will not have relations with her. But say, how do we paskin? So the Rambam paskins halacha lemaisa like the Tanakhama in the Mishnah, namely that after going out and going through this process on the local Beis Din level, so lemaisa we sent two Talmidei Chachamim with the husband and his wife to the Beis HaMikdash in order to ensure that relations does not occur. Says the Mishnah. Well, so now we're in the Beis HaMikdash. So this is also, you don't see, this is very exciting. I mean, exciting on a knowledge level, because here, what we're being walked through this entire process. Literally, we're getting the timeline. So now they've made it to the Beis HaMikdash. They've come with the two Talmidei Chachamim to the Beis HaMikdash. What happens in the Beis HaMikdash? Hayu ma'alin osa le-Beis Din HaGadosh b'Yerushalayim. So I'll say, so the first thing is, they would bring her to the Beis Din HaGadol. Remember, the Beis Din HaGadol was, there were a number of Batei Din that sat in the, we'll call the Har HaBayis, the Temple Mount complex. The Beis Din HaGadol was the largest court within all of Eretz Yisrael, 71 judges. 71 judges. So we'll discuss, by the way, there was a 23-judge Beis Din that was at the entrance of the Har HaBayis. They take her right up to the Beis Din HaGadol. We'll discuss why. U'ma'aymin aleha k'derach she'ma'aymin al edei nefashos. I will say, now, the Lashon of Ma'aymin literally means we intimidate her. Now we'll discuss. It's not really a good English word for it, but you're going to see what it means. But we'll use just intimidate her for now. In order that what? If you look at Rashi, Rashi says uma'aymin alaha shetehei moda. We want her to go ahead. If she committed adultery, we want her to admit. Now, both remember, we want her to admit it for two reasons. Number one, because if we don't have to erase Shem Hashem for no reason, let's not erase Shem Hashem. And of course, if she doesn't have to die, you know, again, I said this yesterday, but for me, I don't know why this resonates in such a profound way. Let's say she did commit adultery. It's amazing how the halacha says, the Mishnah is saying, the Gemara is saying, okay, you made a very, very, very terrible mistake. A very terrible mistake. Perhaps one of the worst mistakes. Together, you know, it's alongside with murder. One of the worst mistakes a person could possibly make, a lapse in morality. You know what? But you have an opportunity to put your life back together and to try to rehabilitate yourself and try to do better going forward. You don't have to die. That's her point. That's the point. You don't have to die over this. So we intimidate her. The Gemara says, well, you're going to see. You'll give me a better word as we go on a little bit. Rabbi Yaakov. So what happens? So the Gemara says the volume. I'm like Kadesh Shema. I'm not leading a fashion. So I'm both like, lest you think that this intimidation is unique for her. It's not unique for her. We do it in every capital case. When witnesses come to testify in a capital case, what we do is we. That's why intimidation is the wrong word. But we twist their arm a little bit just to make sure that they're really telling the truth. Va'omerla, what do we say to her? Va'omerla biti har biyayin osa. Sometimes too much wine gets people into trouble, right? Osa literally means too much wine makes for bad decisions. It also makes for headaches. I see a lot of the expressions over here. So the Gemara says, har beschok osa, right? Sometimes too much levity ultimately goes ahead and gets people into trouble. Har beyaldus osa. Too much immaturity sometimes gets people into trouble. Har b'shchinim ha-ra'in osin. Sometimes too many bad neighbors ultimately again get people into trouble. Asi lishmo ha-gadol shenichtav b'kedusha shelo yimocha alamayim. He says, my daughter, this is the basin speaking to this woman. Please, do it for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. Don't allow the Ribono Shel Olam's name to be erased in the water. Va'omer lefaneha dvarin she'inam kidai l'shoman. He v'chomish b'achas beis aviyah. We say to her things that literally should not be heard. Her and her whole family. Now, what does that mean? If you look at Rashi says, she'ina kidai l'shoman, she'ina ru'uya la she'omer lefaneha divrei hoda'a sadikim harishonim. I will say, now, what this means is, it sounds like you're saying to her, brace it. We're going to talk about episodes. We tell her about episodes of righteous people who made mistakes and admitted their mistakes. So the idea is, generally, we don't have to go around flaunting and just dwelling on the mistakes of righteous people. But in order to get her to be moda, so we give her multiple examples of this. We say this in front of her, in front of her whole family. Im amrat tmeya ani, if she says, I committed adultery, I'm defiled, then what? Shoveres ksuvasa. Now, I will say now, shoveres ksuvasa literally means they break her ksuva. But if you look at Rashi says what this means is shoveres ksuvasa, ksuvas shover. Al ksuvasa zanisi v'ifsarati ksuvasi v'nosenes biad bayla shelo titavena la'achrazman ve'ino neheregas shelo histru ba'idim b'shas ma'isa. Both says, so if she admits that she committed adultery, we have her write a receipt, shovers a receipt, saying to her husband, I was mezana, I committed adultery, therefore I forfeited my ksuva. Now, the benefit of that receipt for the husband is that at some time later on, she tries to claim the ksuva, he has documented proof that she has forfeited it. Vim amra tahorani, but let's say she says, no, I didn't commit adultery, and I want to go through with this process to demonstrate my innocence. Ma'alin osa l'shar ha-mizrach, sha-pesach shar nikanor. We take her to the eastern gate, which is by shar nikanor. Again, we'll discuss these locations are very important. We'll discuss them in greater detail in the Gemara. Shesham mashkines asotos, umetarin es hayoldos, because we'll say by shar nikanor, by this area, this is where we give the sotas to drink. This is where we're metar women who gave birth. Oh, I'll say right, the blast from the past. So then what happens? This is also where we purify the mitzoron. The Kohen ochis bibigadel. We'll say the Kohen grabs her clothing. In mikru, and again, we're going to describe each of these processes in greater detail. In mikru nikru, If ultimately her clothing rips, it rips. The nifrumu literally means shredded. Ad shetehe megala es libo, until literally her chest is exposed. We'll define what that means also. The soser es sara, she unbraids. Now, soser es sara will translate right now as literally unbraids her hair. Right, uncovers or unbraids her hair. Rabbi Huda says, "Im haya liba na'a, if she was an attractive woman, lo haya migalehu, then we would not ultimately again expose her through tearing her clothing. Im haya sa'ara na'a, if her hair was beautiful, lo haya soser, we would not go ahead and undo the braids." So we'll say the idea over here is what? The idea over here is that if she's exceptionally attractive, then the Maisa, again, to go ahead and allow her to be seen by the men who are there, will ultimately, kind of, you know, here we're trying to make a public stand against immorality. So to go ahead and do this will kind of be counterproductive. So the Gemara says, Haisam is kasa belavanim. And again, we're going to discuss each of these processes in greater depth in the Gemara. Haisam is kasa belavanim. If she was wearing white clothing, we would have her wear black clothing. The idea is that if she came to the Beis HaMikdash dressed in attractive clothing, we would have her change into unattractive clothing. I'm sorry. Haya aleha klei zav v'katli os nizamim v'tabos. If she was wearing jewelry, ma'avirin mimena kedei lenavla. We take the jewelry off her in order to make her look unattractive. Ba'achar kach mevi cheval hanetzri. The kosher lemala midadel. Rabbi, even though we said before that we tear her clothing, obviously we don't want her to be standing in the Beis HaMikdash unclothed. So after they tore her clothing, what they would do is they would bring a rope and they would tie the rope on the upper part of her chest. If you can imagine, like, so it'd be right by her armpits to keep her dress up, to keep her body covered. The kosher lemala midadel. Whoever wants to come to see this sota process is permitted to come see the sota process. Chutz me'avadeh v'shivchoseha. Also, with the exception of who? Her servants. Why? Mipnei shaliba gaspohen. Well, so this is actually amazing. Because literally, Kitrashi, the shaliba gaspohen, kisha adam ra b'nei beiso daita miskaberes ala v'lo tira v'lo toda v'anam v'akshin shetoda v'lo yimacha shem ha-kadosh alamayin. Well, so here's the issue. If her maidservants are there, the Chazal felt she's going to be more reticent to express her guilt. Meaning a person does not want to express their shortcomings and their faults in front of people that they feel are in a lower station than themselves. So if the maidservant is there, the woman may be emboldened to maintain her position that she did not commit adultery, even if she did. Remember, on this day, we're trying to do anything and everything in our power, ultimately to go ahead and get her to admit if indeed she did commit adultery. All women are permitted to come and see this spectacle. Shneamar v'nosu kol anashim v'lo ta'asena kizmachtano. That ultimately, again, all of the women, or I say kizi maschano, all the women will come and see, and they will see ultimately again like this immorality. We'll say the idea over here is, remember, we're using this process to create a strong public message about maintaining moral norms. I both say, you may be thinking to yourself, well, one second, what happens if she's innocent? Right, let's say she didn't commit adultery. So this whole process will degrade. So understand, the only way you get into this process is how? Is if already you engaged in questionable behavior. Remember again that the idea is that this is not just the pshat that the husband has a suspicion, so he's dragging his wife here. Again, there was already raglayim ledavar because he warned her about a particular man. Again, we didn't discuss, but we'll see in the Gemara that there's even criteria for the warning itself. And then remember, she was alone with this man for long enough for something to have occurred. So which means that even if she did not commit adultery, there is absolutely unequivocally still a moral lapse. And you see from a Judaic perspective, we'll say we know this because unfortunately this is a challenge in our society, that when moral pillars begin to erode, it becomes a snowball effect. And again, chas v'shalom, entire societies could implode when there's not a moral framework and a moral structure. So Torah felt so strongly about this that this whole thing becomes a spectacle. Because again, even if she didn't commit adultery, there's still been some moral lapse that's been committed. So how do we know this? How do we know what? How do we know that we bring her to the Beis Din HaGadol? Remember again, first stop in Yerushalayim is the High Court, 71 judges. So how do we know this? Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Gamda, Amar Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina, Asya Torah Torah. We make a gzir shava of Torah Torah. What's the gzir shava? Ksiv hacha va'asal ha'koin is kol ha'Torah. So remember the pasuk over here by Sota says, the coin will do for her the entire Torah, so to speak, the entire process of Sota. Uksiv hasam, and it says there, apia Torah asher yorucha. The pasuk says again, speaking about the power of chachamim, the pasuk says, apia Torah asher yorucha. The Torah that they will instruct you. So what do you see from here? Ma lahalon b'shiv ve'echad. Just like again, the pasuk by the Beis Din is talking about the power of Beis Din. That Beis Din has the power to interpret for us, ultimately again, what Torah is and what the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. So just like that's referring to the Beis Din of 71 judges, so to Torah over here by Sota is also referring to the Beis Din of 71 judges. Fine. U'ma'aymin aleha. Remember again, so the Mishnah said, we intimidate her. In order to get her to admit if she committed adultery, Uminhu, Sigmar Sakasha, Kederach Shema Aymin Alel Shlo Tishta. Now, remember, from the Mishnah, what it sounds like is what? That we intimidate her in order to get her not to drink. Meaning, in order to get her to admit her guilt and hopefully avoid drinking the waters, both for her benefit as well as for this way, again, not erasing Shem Hashem. So the Gemara says, in the same way that we intimidate her not to drink, Kach Ma'aymin Alel Shet Tishta. So too, we encourage her to drink. That's what I'm saying. Ma'amin is not the right word. Intimidate is not the right word. Maybe it's urge. Pressure. That's fair. The same way that we pressure her not to drink, so we also pressure her to drink. How does that mean? We say, B.T., in bar lecha, hadavar shetahora at, right? Our daughter, if you're sure, if you're positive that you did not commit adultery, then in the al bar yech, stand your ground, ushati, you should see, and drink. Why? Because you know what the waters are like? The waters are like a sam yavish, means like a salve. Right? It's like a salve, it's like some type of medical ointment that you put on top of flesh. If there is a wound there, then the salve will penetrate the flesh and will enter into the body. If there's no injury, if there's no wound on the flesh, then what? Then ultimately the salve does absolutely nothing. So they're telling her, listen, if you believe you're innocent, then drink the water. Drink it, because the truth is, now here's what's interesting. They tell her that the water won't do anything to you. Now, Bosse, we'll see later on, we know, in fact, that's not true. If she is innocent, the water actually serves as an incredible bracha for her. Now, we'll discuss why that wasn't part of the Beis Din speech. We'll get to that. So, Bosse, but we have a kasha. What's the kasha? The Mishnah makes it sound like we only pressure her not to drink, meaning the Mishnah dafka seems we're not pressuring her to drink it. Oh, we're dafka pressuring her not to drink. And here the Bryce indicates that what? That we're pressuring her to drink. To which the Gemara says, "Lo kasha." It's not a contradiction. Kan kodem shenimchika megillah, kan la'achar shenimchika megillah. Oh, it depends. Before the parsha sota is erased, we pressure her not to drink. Once the parsha has been erased, the Shem Hashem has been erased, then what? We switch gears and we pressure her to drink. Says the Gemara, "Va'omer lefaneha." Remember, we say to her, and the wording of the Mishnah is actually very interesting. We say before her, "Dvarim." She'inam kedai l'shomon. Things that perhaps shouldn't normally be said in public spheres. What is that? Tan Rabbanan, omrim lefanei dvarim shahagada, u'ma'aseh she'iru b'ksuvim harishonim. We tell her stories of things. We tell her stories and events that occurred in the earlier scriptures. Kegon, asher chachamim yagidu v'lo kichadu me'avosam. We tell her about the fact that what the sages say, and that our ancestors ultimately, again, never refrained from telling the truth. We tell us stories of great people who made mistakes, but then owned their mistakes by admitting it. So, for example, we tell her, Yehuda holdav lobosh. Yehuda made a mistake. Rabbi said this is ultimately referring to the episode with Tamar. Right? Remember, again, the episode in Bereishis, he thinks that Tamar is a zona. He thinks that she's a harlot. He has relations with her. She becomes pregnant. They think that she committed, remember, it's interesting, because they think that she committed some type of quasi-adultery, even though, remember, she's not married to anyone at that point in time, but she was, so to speak, waiting to marry Shelah. So therefore, again, it was a quasi-adultery. They were under Noahide law. It was considered to be adultery. They're ready to kill her. And what happens? She's ready not to say anything, right? She's ready to die. All she simply says is, whoever owns this staff, this cloak, this signet ring, ultimately this is the father of my child. And again, it's up to Yehuda to take responsibility or not. Yehuda says, Sadka mimeni, she was smarter than me, a wise woman. He takes responsibility for what it is that he did. Mahaya sofo. So Yehuda took responsibility. He admitted what he did and he was not embarrassed. So what was his end? Nachal chaye ha'olam haba. He inherited a beautiful portion in the world to come. Similarly, Reuven hoda v'lo bosh. Reuven admitted his guilt, bless you, and he was not embarrassed. Now, what is this referring to? So this is referring to the episode with Bilhah. Right, with Bilhah. Remember, again, we'll say it's a very enigmatic pasuk. The Torah seems to indicate that the pasuk says that Reuven slept with Bilhah. So Rashi HaKadosh quotes the Gemara that says, doesn't literally mean he slept with Bilhah, but rather, again, what it means is he switched his father's bed. This is after the death of Rachel Imenu. So Yaakov Avinu goes ahead and puts his bed in the tent of Bilhah, the maidservant of Rachel. Reuven is very upset, because when Rachel was alive, I understand Rachel was the favorite wife, but now that Rachel's dead, my mother should become, Leah should become the favorite wife. He was upset, so he moves the bed. But the Torah calls it that he slept ultimately with Bilhah. So what's interesting is the following. What's interesting is, as a way of going ahead to get her to admit, it becomes clear from the Gemara that they actually, the Beis Din interprets the pasuk kimashmao, and it's just basic. Why? Because we also remember, understand the power of that. If you interpret the pasuk literally, then what does it mean? It means that Reuven Chas Hashem committed an act of immorality, and yet he admitted his mistake. So the mice again, they're trying to encourage the woman to admit her mistake as well. Mahaya sofa. So, excuse me. Reuven hodav lo bosh. Mahaya sofa. What happened with Reuven? What was his end? He inherited the world to come. Umascharan, what's the reward Yehuda and Reuven for admitting their faults? So the Gemara says, Mascharan kidikaminon. What do you mean, what's their reward? We said what their reward is. They got a beautiful olam haba. Elamascharan ba'olam azeh. I understand they got a beautiful Gan Eden, but what did they get in this world for taking responsibility, owning their mistakes, and admitting what it is that they have done? So the Gemara says, Mascharan ba'olam azeh. So the pasuk says, Lahem levadam is actually the pasuk in Eov. To them themselves, to Yehuda and Reuven, they were given the land. V'lo avar zar bisocham, and a stranger never passed among them. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Lahem levadam nasna aretz, almost right across in Rashi. Lahem levadam nasna aretz, Yehuda zachal malchus, each Yehuda and Reuven both acquired something unique within Eretz Yisrael. Yehuda, of course, acquired the monarchy. Yehuda zacha l'malchus, but the seventh of the brachas. Reuven natal chelek tchila be'eretz be'rayardin. And Reuven was the first one to receive his portion of Eretz Yisrael in Transjordanian lands. So again, each are rewarded for owning their mistakes, admitting it, and taking responsibility. Yehuda gets malchus for that, and ultimately Reuven gets the first portion of Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says the following: Bishlami be Yehuda afkicham de'odi. So I understand. Now we're going to go back. So these are the two episodes that they go ahead and they give. These are the two examples they give the woman of great people who made mistakes but admitted their mistakes. So I understand that Yehuda. I know Bishlami Yehuda afkicham de'odi. I know that Yehuda made a mistake and he admitted it. Then what happens? That Yehuda recognized his personal effects, he recognized his items that Tamar had, and he says, she's wiser than me. And therefore, again, he admitted that he was the father of her child. El Reuven minolan de'odi. But where do we see that Reuven ever admitted the mistake that he made with Bilhah? Rabbi Shlomo Nachmani, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, listen to this. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, my dechsev yichi Reuven va'al yamos. I'll say, listen to this. What does it mean when the pasuk says, let Reuven live, and he will not die? Vizos li Yehuda. And this is, in other words, this is in Vizos HaBracha. So, and the brachos for Reuven and Yehuda are juxtaposed. Right? Which is, why are they next to each other? Right? Remember, again, that's not in birth order. So it says again, Yichi Reuven va'al yamos. So Reuven should live and not die. And then the next pasuk is, Vizos li Yehuda. This is the bracha of Yehuda. So why are those speaking juxtaposed? This is an amazing Gemara. Amazing Gemara. Ko osan shanim. Shehoi Yisrael b'midbar. All the years that Klal Yisrael were in the desert, Atzmosav shel Yehuda migulgalin ba'aron. The bones of Yehuda were rolling around in his casket. The bones, meaning the remains of Yehuda,
were not at rest. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, "Atzmoso sheyudim iskal galan ba'aron, atzmoso shakol shadim helum mitzrayim." V'ushamar Yosef alisin zatzay mizaytchem im atzmosechem vayu atzmos kol shadim shaladon kayemes v'huda ivara misparkin umiskal galan ba'aron mipnei shenit. So listen to this. So first of all, Rashi points out that when they took the remains of Yosef, they took the remains of all of the shvatim with them for burial in Eretz Yisrael, and the skeletons of the shvatim were still intact. The bones of Yehuda were constantly rolling around in the casket. Why? Mipnei shenida es atzmo beirvuno shel Binyamin v'chatasi lecha kol hayamim afili olam haba u'mehacha nafkala nidui shel chacham afilu al tenayu ba. But also, remember again, this is amazing. We'll get more into this later on. But do you remember when Yehuda was trying to convince Yaakov Avinu to send Binyamin to Mitzrayim? Because before Yosef reveals his identity, Yehuda says, "Dad, we can't get food unless you bring Binyamin." And what does Yehuda say to Yaakov? "If I don't bring back Binyamin, v'chatasi lecha kol hayamim, literally, I will be in a state of sin for you for all eternity." Nidui, excommunication. Rashi is pointing out over here that the excommunication of Talmud Chacham, of self-imposed, is so powerful that even if the reason was not fulfilled because he brought back Binyamin, ultimately, again, the excommunication is still in effect. So Yehuda's bones are rolling around because literally he's in a state of nidui. He's in a state of excommunication. So what happens? Ad she'amad Moshe b'kishav rachamim. Moshe Rabbeinu sees that Yehuda's bones are rolling around in the casket, and Moshe Rabbeinu gets up and he davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Amar l'Father, Ribono Shel Olam, Migaram L'Ruvein Shehoda. Who is it that ultimately caused Ruvein to admit what he did with Bilhah? Yehuda. It was the fact that Yehuda went ahead and admitted what happened with Tamar. That ultimately gave Reuven the strength to admit what he did with Bilhah. V'zos liYehuda. So amazingly enough, that's why it says, Yechi Reuven va'al yamos. Why is it that Reuven was able to live? Why is it that he was able to recover after the mistake that he made? V'zos liYehuda. Because Yehuda gave everyone, Yehuda was the one who set the example. When you make a mistake, own your mistake, admit your mistake, pick up the pieces and rebuild. So who was it, says Moshe Rabbeinu to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they gave Reuven the courage to be able to admit his mistake? It was Yehuda. Miyad, listen to this, Miyad, Shama Hashem kol Yehuda. Al Evereha. I'm sorry. What's wrong? Did I say something wrong? So al evayraha l'shafa. So what happens? All of the bones entered back into their joints. So the remains of Yehuda ultimately came to rest. This is wild stuff. V'lohava kama island lay l'mesifta derakia. But I will say what happens. They would not allow Yehuda into the yeshiva shalmala. They wouldn't allow him into the heavenly academy. So what happens? So if you take a look, l'mesifta, it's the first white line of Rashi, Lisa v'litin im sharach hachamim. So they would not allow Yehuda into the yeshiva shalmala to be able to converse in Torah with the other talmidei chachamim. Moshe Rabbeinu continues that ve'el amo tivienu. Allow him to come to his nation. Allow him entry into the yeshiva shamala. Fine, so they allowed him in. V'lo hava kayada mishkal u'mitrach b'shmaita b'hadira banon. But Yehuda was unable to go ahead and converse in Torah with the other Nidicham. So now he has a seat in the base medrash, which is no novel thing, right? A seat in the base medrash. And then what happens? And now, again, they allow, but one problem, he can't converse. He can't converse with Tamidi Chachamim. So Moshe Rabbeinu davens again, Yadav Rav Lo. Literally, allow his hands to be able to engage in battle, to Mechamta Shal Torah. So what happens? Again, that happens. However, Lo Hava Kasaka Leishmaita Liba Dehilchasa. But ultimately, again, Yehuda was unable to rule on halachic matters in a halacha lemaisa fashion. So Moshe Rabbeinu again davens ve'ezer mitzaraf tiyah, allow him to have salvation from his enemies. So lemaisa again, Moshe Rabbeinu davens, so you understand, Moshe Rabbeinu davens for Yehuda from everything, from allowing his remains to have rest in this world, ultimately to be allowing to be admitted into the yeshiva shamala, and ultimately to be able to participate in the Torah discussions with the al talmidei chachamim. To which the Gemara says, Bishlam Yehuda, da'odi keichid lo tisraf tamar. I understand Yehuda admitted his involvement in this episode in order that Tamar not be killed. El Reuven, lama li da'odi. Listen to this. This is amazing. So I understand why Yehuda admitted his role in the episode of Tarim, because again, had Yehuda not stepped forward and taken responsibility, what would have happened? Tamar would have been killed. But why does Reuven have to admit what happened with Bilhah? Why does he have to admit that? And if anything, Rav Sheisha says, "Chatzif alai." I think it's disgusting when people publicize their sins. Rav Sheisha, you should know that Rambam codifies this halacha l'maisin hilchos tshuva. The Rambam writes that averos bin adam l'chavero. The only way to do tshuva is to ask a person for mechila. So you have to publicize your sins. But averos bin adam l'makum, the Rambam says, you should not share those with other people. Again, if you're asking eitzah from someone how to do proper tshuva, that's one thing. But to talk about it publicly is, as the Rambam sees, is a lack of remorse. You're clearly not embarrassed about it, if you could just speak about it. So why is Reuven saying anything? After Rav Sheisha says, literally, it's disgusting if someone speaks about the Averus bin Adul Makum, to which the Gemara says, no. This is amazing. Because someone switched around Bilhah's bed. And if Reuven did not take responsibility for it, then what? Then Yaakov might be choshed one of the other brothers. In order that Yaakov should not chas shalom be choshed someone else, Reuven took responsibility. So we'll stop over here for today. But we see again, in an effort to get the sota to be able to admit the mistake in the event that she actually made it, so we go ahead and we say to her again, great people, number one, I will say, great people made mistakes. That's the first issue. Great people made mistakes. Number two, in fact, great people make mistakes, that's not a chiddush. But what makes great people great is they admit it, they own it, and they rebuild. We tried to tell the sota, if Yehuda could do it, if Reuven could do it, then you could do it as well. Don't allow the Shem Hashem to be erased. Don't allow yourself to be destroyed. You made a terrible, terrible mistake, but there's still hope for the future. We'll pick up here tomorrow. Just in general, as you've seen, these dapim are a little bit longer, so on a serious note, we're probably going to end up starting just a few minutes before 6. So again, depending on the day, instead of sending out an email every single day, we're starting this time or this time there. If the daf is long, we're going to be starting earlier than 6. So just keep that in mind with your morning schedule.
If anyone is not on my email list for daf yomi, please.